are live on the Muskogee Reservation, and you are on the Muskogee Pod. Great to have everybody back. Season 3, off and running, Jason Salzman. I'm joined now with Miss Shelby Beautone. She's going to be with me kind of on the board and running through everything on this season. And Shelb, it's great to have you on the pod.
Happy to be here. So exciting. Damn. Ready for season 3. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'll tell you a little something about Shelby, okay? We're going to break it down a little bit.
Uh-oh.
When I think of Shelby, I'm like, she's so jot. And I'll explain that to you guys here, because here's the thing about Shelby. Sequoia High School, Haskell Indian Nations University, that's so jot. And people are probably, I hope a lot of people out there listening are like, oh, what's he talking about? So jot and everything like that. Let me just break it down for you. For the folks that don't, Muskogee Obanaga, all right? Jotty in the Muskogee language is red, okay?
Correct.
Ista jotty means red people, right? Isti is person, red person, okay? So we Creeks, you know, over the years, we just said, like, you know what? We really don't need that first isti, that whole isti. We'll just stajotty.
We like shortening words.
Yes, that's we do. Absolutely. So when we call each other stajotties, that's a native. And so I've taken on just shortening that. And I was like, oh, that's so jot. You know what I mean? So, like, if I see a guy with a belt buckle on and it's got literally three whole rocks of turquoise, that's jot. And so, like, when I look at it like that, I'm like, you know what? I had to have Shelby on with me because, you know, Shelby's so jot. And I love that. Well, what we got going on this week? A lot of things happening in the nation right now. This month, actually, it's going to be a big month for us, and a lot of travel going on.
Lots of travel.
We'll be going to Atlanta at the end of the month for oral arguments at the U.S. Court of Appeals in our fight for Hickory Ground, the Ojibova, the mother ground of the Muskogee Creek Nation, traditional ceremonial ground, and the desecration that took place. And we'll be exploring that here pretty soon on an episode of the Muskogee Pod, that whole issue between the Porch Band of Creek Indians there in Alabama and the Muskogee Creek Nation. It's been going on for about 20 years now. Yeah, and so, and the desecration of sacred sites, and it's led to a bigger battle than just that place, but for, you know, the protection and like I said, the keeping sacred sites sacred and not making sure that they're disturbed or anything like that. That's going to be a big focal point there in Atlanta as we argue before the U.S. Court of Appeals, and a lot of good energy there with a lot of people going that way.
Right. And you and I will be on the ground.
We will be on the ground. Yeah. Definitely be checking out the Muskogee Nation socials, Facebook page. We're going to have daily sort of like blogs and stuff like that, correct, like video logs and everything. Yeah, yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be there with you on the bus. We're going to be there with you on the ground, at the courthouse, at the candlelight vigil, what's taking place the night before the arguments.
Correct.
And then we'll have a march.
March
for justice. Yeah.
That morning of the oral arguments.
Yeah. So Shelby and I will be embedded with the whole thing. So that's going to be really cool, and definitely want to check that out. And you know, a lot of cool things happening here around the complex too. Like yesterday we got the chance to announce Kenzie Hansen, national champion, four-time national champion softball player for University of Oklahoma. She's going to come to the Muskogee Creek Nation and do a camp for our youth. And we're excited about that too. Right. Just a lot that's of cool in, stuff happening.
Yeah, that's October 6th.
October 6th. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, so. The Kenzie Hansen camp. So if you weren't able to get registered or signed up, or you're simply just aged out, but you're a big fan, come on out to the Omniplex and check out the, you know, our youth training with the best.
The best. And what's cool is, like, you know, and unfortunately it is K through eight, kindergarten through eighth grade, just because of NCAA, you know, recruiting and things like that. And we want to be compliant and make sure everybody, you know, there's all nothing. The rules, yes, absolutely. So it is limited, and it is limited to Creek citizens, because this is a free camp for our Creek citizens. Normally, this is a pretty good penny for this kind of camp. So we're taking care of that. The Muskogee Nation Department of Health stepping up, doing a great job there.
Providing an amazing opportunity
for you. Absolutely. Yeah. And what about the response yesterday? I mean, you were tracking that. So
I know. it's sold out. Registration closed up pretty quick.
Yeah, it did. And when it's so funny, because we put stuff up on social media, and we sometimes we're like, oh, this will be, you know, big, and it doesn't, you know, and it's not much. And then we're like, oh, this will be, you know, and it does. And we're like, oh, we knew it, you know, and this is one of those where,
yeah,
you know,
can't go wrong with OU softball. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah. All of that happening here at the Nation, and a lot of good things happening here, just for us. And we're just so glad to be back. The Muskogee Pod is something that, you know, I've talked to a lot of people out there that have said, when are you bringing the Muskogee Pod back? You know, I used to mow the lawn and throw my headphones on and listen to the Muskogee Pod, or, you know, at night, whenever I was ready for bed, just throw my headphones in. And that was something we'd like
listening to your own voice, falling asleep. Yes. It calms you.
Lucy came in earlier and was like, "Hey Jason, who is that on your," we were listening to an old episode. She was like, "Who is that on your computer?" I was like, "That's me, Lucy." And she was like, "Huh? Must be your podcast voice." I was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm really not using a different voice for the podcast. I promise." My old native news. It was so funny the other night. I was at the house and I'm sitting there, fiance Ashton, and I was talking to her about, you know, how I'm gonna, you know, get back into podcast shape, you know, and get going and everything. And I kind of was doing my little own practicing with myself, and I was like, "Good Saturday afternoon," and I was like, "That's the wrong catchphrase. That's my old native news." But I was thinking to myself, I was like, yeah, like, and as Mark's looking at us like, "Hey, I remember that guy." You know, I wonder, you know, sometimes I do this podcast, if people are like, you know, wonder if he'll ever bring back native news for us. And I run into people all the time that are like, "Hey, you ever doing to do the show again?" I was like, "Yeah, well, you know what? I'm having a great time with the podcast right now. So we'll see, you know, maybe one day." You never say never. And so I really do enjoy hearing from those people that watch the show forever. And it's funny though, to try to get back into the podcast routine and throw out the good Saturday afternoon. Cause that was what I hit everybody with right off the bat for many years on Native News.
You
today,
don't know how many people tell me they miss that show.
Oh, no way. Really? Yeah. That's cool.
I know. You were a superstar.
I thought it was just Mark. He's like, "Man, you got to do Native News." You can tell, folks, we have a great time up here, and we have to, you know, I mean, we love what we do. We love the Muskogee people, and so we want it to show forth in the work we do, and take it seriously when it's time to take it seriously, and then, you know, have a good time when that calls for it as well. So a lot of stuff happening. Right. But
I was just going to add too, for our Dallas area citizens, September 21st is the Dallas outreach for our citizens beyond the reservation.
Yeah, so just be in a few days. Yeah. Check it out.
If you're in Dallas or the surrounding areas, come check it out. I believe it's at the Weston Galleria.
Yeah. And you'll be there, right?
I'll be there.
So come up to Shelby and point at her and go, "That's so Jot. I listen to the Muskogee Pod," and she'll give you a sticker.
Yeah. Yeah,
how about that?
Or we need to get t-shirts.
Yeah. I say, "That's so Jot." Muskogee Pod on the front. So Jot on the back. What do you think, Mark?
Like that.
Good? Yeah, I do too. I think that's it. All right, well, let's do what we came here to do today, and that is bring in our first guest for this season of the podcast. And I got to tell you, Shelby, I think we had a home run, because we've got the leading litigator in Indian country, widely regarded, Mr. Riaz Kanji. And Riaz was the lead counsel for the Muskogee Nation in McGirt v. Oklahoma, which, as everybody knows now, monumental historic case, the reaffirmation of the Muskogee Reservation at the far end of the Trail of Tears was a promise. And Neil Gorsuch delivered that decision, the 5-4 decision. But our guest today was, as they call, the man in the arena. He was the guy, and he made the arguments, and he made the compelling arguments on behalf of the Muskogee Nation. And it's because of those compelling arguments that those judges were compelled to rule in favor of the affirmation of this reservation. And it changed our world for good and all. And if you look at it, like we said, this is a textbook guy. This will be something that is in history and is in law reviews, and you know, for good and all, this is going to be something that is in, you know, education and everything like that when it comes to any Supreme Court case, Indian matters, what have you. And we have him batting leadoff here. So without further ado, let's get to our interview with Mr. Riaz Kanji. He is the lead counsel in McGirt v. Oklahoma on behalf of the Muskogee Nation. And he's right here on the Muskogee Pod. And now in the Pod Cave for season 3, episode 1, we have Mr. Riaz Kanji, and he is joining us from up in Ann Arbor, Michigan today, where he is at his law firm, Kanji Katzen there. Riaz, first of all, thank you so much for being with us today. How's things going up there in Michigan?
Things are good. Sorry we didn't manage to deliver in the game against Texas over the weekend, but it's a pleasure to be here.
It's okay, man. It's still horns down over here, and I'm sure it is up there in Michigan, and you guys will get things figured out, and don't worry, we'll take care of them here in a few weeks, and we'll be excited about that game as we always are. But hey, today we're talking to you about a host of things, but really the reason that you're on with us is because you are widely viewed as the leading trial and appellate litigator for all of Indian country, Indian nations, tribes across the country. Your reputation precedes you in these matters, and certainly as the lead counsel in McGirt versus Oklahoma. Riaz, I want to get started talking to you a little bit about just how did you become this figure in Indian law? What was it for you? And tell us a little bit about your background and how you came into law and everything like that and all of that. But what was it about Indian law that really fascinated you and took you to that that level?
Well, thank you. And of course, that's all very kind. I've been extremely lucky in my career to have, terrific mentors all along the way, starting from when I was a young lawyer. My first real exposure to federal Indian law was when I was clerking for a wonderful judge on the Ninth Circuit, the Federal Court of Appeals out in Seattle. And we had 3 Indian law cases that term, and I was clerking for a judge, Betty Fletcher, who had been on the court for a long time and who took a really deep-seated interest in Indian law issues. And so I had a chance to see that court grapple with some intriguing issues, and that sort of piqued my interest in terms of the legal doctrine, but the factual, emotional part of the career was really inspired when I went the next year after finishing that clerkship to work at Evergreen Legal Services, which is also in Seattle. And I started working. I was very lucky as a young lawyer, and I worked on this treaty shellfishing rights case. And in my 2 years, I had a 2-year fellowship there. I got to sort of see that case from the inception of the trial proceedings through the end of trial. And it was a fascinating case. It had to do with a lot of treaty history. And I had the exposure, Jason, to a lot of tribes and clients who cared deeply about that case. And I'll tell you just one quick anecdote. The very first meeting that I went to of tribal leaders, Phil Katzen, who headed up Evergreen's Indian Law Project, who was my first real mentor in the field and who I ultimately ended up forming our firm with. Phil was a terrific mentor, took me to this meeting, and there were a lot of tribal leaders there. And one of them was Billy Frank, who is a noted, leader in the Pacific Northwest. He's now passed on, but dearly beloved, had been a leader in the fish wars in the 60s and 70s. And Phil introduced me to Billy. Billy looked at me, and Billy didn't know me from Adam. And all gave me this big bear hug. And in that bear hug, he was saying, welcome aboard. You're one of us now. And it was that sort of feeling of being welcomed and the opportunity then to try to make a difference that really have been so important in my career.
Yeah. And for us and everybody around here, you'll always be sort of that textbook guy, the guy that's always remembered for McGirt v. Oklahoma, and rightfully so. Riaz, I don't know where you put it in your list of, all-time impactful Indian law cases in history, but it's got to be up there, if not the top, in a group of the top. So take us to that day. And for a litigator, I have to imagine before the United States Supreme Court, that's got to be like your Super Bowl. I mean, it's game time. Talk a little bit about the lead up to how you came on the case, how you felt when it was picked up for Supreme Court oral arguments and things like that. And then day of, what's going through your mind as far as you're there, really understanding the impact and the weight and of the situation that you're in and everything like that. I got to believe that when people listen to this podcast, that's what they want to know, sort of being there in game time atmosphere, what it was like for you.
Sure. So first, it's been, you know, the incredible privilege of my lifetime to represent the Muscogee Creek Nation in the battles over the continued existence and viability of its reservation. And I think that's true for, you know, anyone in our firm who has worked on the cases. I'll break your, it's an excellent question. I'll break it down into a couple of parts and pause between them, so I'm not just droning on. But first, in terms of, you know, how we came to get involved in the case, I like to tell this story because I think it demonstrates that young people, whether in the law or outside of the law, if they have a vision, can really make such a difference, and that you don't have to wait until you've got gray hair like I do to do that. The case really, and you know, the first case was Patrick Murphy's case, right? That's where the reservation issue was first teed up. And we had a young lawyer join our firm. His name's Philip Tinker, from Oklahoma. He's Osage, had gone to law school at Tulsa. And while in law school, Philip had started working with Patty Gezzi and others on the Patrick Murphy's case. And he was doing legal work and formulating, you know, this, the arguments that the Creek Reservation continued to exist. And Phil worked really hard, joined our firm, and first day in the office came in and said to me, "Can we keep working on this case? You know, it'd have to be pro bono." And I said, "What's the pro bono's fine, but what, you know, tell me about the case." And he told me about Patrick Murphy and the facts of his grisly murder and the fact that he's on death row. And then the underlying legal issue being whether the Muscogee Creek Reservation remained intact. And I looked at Philip and I said, you know, the old saying, bad facts make bad law. I don't know that this is the case where we want to seek to challenge the conventional wisdom that all the reservations in eastern Oklahoma have gone by the wayside. You know, we really might want to pick a case with better facts, not a grisly murder. But Philip said, you know, this case is the one, it's going to raise this issue. And the way I tell the story, Philip says it wasn't quite this often, but really for the next couple of years, because the case was in limbo, he was in my office once a week saying, we need to take this case. We need to take this case. And I was really hesitating because of the concern about the factual situation. But ultimately, Philip made the point to me that, the case was going to go forward. It was in the 10th Circuit, the Federal Court of Appeals, and that it would be much better if the nation got into the case and spoke with its own voice. And that's something I believe very strongly in, that that federal Indian nations need to be, whether it's in the courts or in the public relations arena, really, you know, it's the old adage, if you don't tell your own story, others will tell it for you. And we need to be telling the stories of Indian nations in court rather than letting others do it. And so when it was clear that Mr. Murphy was going to continue to raise the argument, that at that point I said, yes, let's do it. We need to get the nation on board. And it was at that point that we reached out to the nation, and Kevin Dellinger, who was the attorney general at the time, and Chief Floyd and others all were incredibly supportive, and we moved forward. So that's how we got involved in the case. And then there were sort of two watershed moments. One is in the 10th Circuit. You know, we litigated the case in the 10th Circuit. Philip and my partner, David Jim Petroni, worked extremely hard on the case. David argued it in the circuit. And Jason, in terms of kind of highlight moments in a career, when the 10th Circuit issued its decision saying that the Muscogee Creek Reservation remained intact. That was a huge moment. And we've litigated, you know, some fairly big cases, but I don't think we've ever gotten a decision where we got that much attention and that many calls and so many plaudits, and the excitement was really tangible. And I think to have a federal court reaffirming the viability and continued existence of the reservation was a huge moment. But we didn't have much time to celebrate because, you know, we became pretty clear pretty quickly that the Supreme Court was going to take up the case. And that's what led to what you asked about, which is the oral arguments. So we argued the case twice. We argued it first in Murphy, and then we argued it again in McGirt. So twice before the Supreme Court. Murphy was the one that we argued in person. McGirt, we ended up arguing remotely.
Yeah, and I was gonna ask you about that, because, and I'm sorry to jump in here, but I think this is an important part here. The McGirt arguments took place during COVID. I mean, in the throes of COVID, and I remember that day vividly because myself, Second Chief Dale Beaver, and Principal Chief David Hill were the only ones basically on campus, like here at the headquarters, and we were in the executive conference room, and we basically just have it on a TV screen, and we don't see anybody, but we hear you. And we've sort of got like our Riaz pennants, you know, like, and we, you know, like, we're like, go, man. And we're watching it like it's a football game or something. It was so hilarious. But like, that was just an odd time for all of us. And I imagine arguing before the Supreme Court, you, in your mind as a lawyer, think the first time, you know, the big red, you know, curtains and just the whole, you know, scene of it all. And then you're doing it virtually. I imagine, did that change any way that you, did the scene change your outlook on anything or whatever? Or was it just, hey, we're making an argument, whether we're doing it through a computer or in person or whatever. I wonder if that went through your head at all.
Oh, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. That, you know, that spring when we argued McGirt and we did it remotely, obviously that was such a unusual, unsettling time for all of us for so many reasons. And then adding on top of that, this notion of how is this going to work, you know, doing an argument to the court, sitting in my living room. You guys are in that room. I did the argument in my living room. My wife and my two kids were there on the couch, which was kind of neat. And nice, but it was a very different context. One thing that was a little challenging for me about it is I really do like to read people's facial expressions, and in an argument, you really try to make it a conversation, and that was harder in the virtual format. You know, with the court, it was just I was on the phone, so we couldn't see faces as you said, and then the court did the argument differently so that it segmented it, you know, each justice asking questions one by one, which is not the normal free for all way. But there were some advantages to that as well. I'm going to get a chance to have sort of 9 separate conversations as each justice, you know, asks his or her questions. And that was actually provided a way to have a little bit more in the way of detailed discourse. The other thing that was different the second time in McGirt was, the court had already heard arguments once, you know, in Murphy. The court had already read briefs in Murphy and then again in McGirt. There were undoubtedly draft opinions that had been circulated in Murphy. So by the time we got to the McGirt argument, the court knew the issues in a much more detailed way, I think, than is the norm at oral argument. And so the substance of the questions was also different.
I think that's so cool that you said that your wife and kids are sitting there in the living room and you're arguing before the Supreme Court. I mean, that's got to be literally the most unique Supreme Court argument setting in history. But I tell you what, there's got to be something about that living room, and there's got to be some good juju on the Kanji family, because it worked. And now we fast forward to you make the argument and then the sit around and wait game. And I got to tell you, Riaz, for us, that was sort of every time, we were like religious Turtle Talk followers at that time. And like SCOTUS blog was like on all of our, that became the new lexicon for everybody here. And we even had Chief Hill going, "Hey, did you hear anything on SCOTUS blog?" And I'm like, "Chief, you've never said SCOTUS blog in your life. This is hilarious." And we're all checking. And then, there were those days where they would release opinions and it wouldn't be. And then it sort of came down to, they're either going to release the opinion this day or they're, we're going to go to the next session or whatever. And I think for us, that July 9th, and I just got to say, for me, that day, that's sort of for all of us. And we call it Sovereignty Day now here at Muskogee Nation. We turned it into a national holiday by executive order. So July 9th is our 4th. That's what we tell everybody at Muskogee Nation. And we look at it as Sovereignty Day. And when we look at it as Sovereignty Day, it means something. And that day is sort of marked in history. And so because of that, we look at it in terms of kind of where we were at, what we were doing, what the feeling was and everything like that. And I know for myself, we were at River Spirit Casino in Tulsa. That's our biggest, entertainment spot there. And we had a conference that morning, and I believe it was with the American Indian Chamber of Commerce, and Chief was giving a welcome and everybody was kind of there. And it was myself, Chief, second Chief, Speaker of the National Council. I mean, the everybody was there, and I, Jonadev Chowdhury, our ambassador, and I'm sure you know Jonadev very well. Jonadev Chowdhury was sort of our kind of legal eagle, if you want to say. He was kind of like on the phone, kind of texting back and forth with me, because I'm looking and everything like that, and I'm refreshing on the laptop when Chief and them are up there, and Chief's giving a welcome, and we're about to get the biggest decision in the history of our nation. And so I'm sitting over there refreshing and everything, and the decision drops. Okay. And so I'm looking, I click on it, of course, and I'm, just listen, I am not a lawyer. I do not read, I can get through a brief and I can kind of, now I'm a lot better than I was then even, but, I'm clicking on there and I'm looking and I'm sort of just looking for like a, hey, is there a score? Is there a final, is there whatever that I can see? And I'm going through all of the, when you click on the document, you got to get through a lot before you actually get down to, okay, here's the opinion and everything like that. So I'm kind of scrolling through there and looking and everything. And I just, my phone dings and I look down, Jonadev Chowdhury, and it just in all caps, "We won," with like 3 exclamation points. And I literally we all just kind of, it was amazing because like I stopped looking then. I was like, I'm just going to take Jonadev's word for it. He knows exactly what, Jonadev knew to go to the very end and look and see what actually was the opinion. But that's a little funny part of it for me, I guess, and I think too, Shelby, where were you at when it came down? What was it like for you?
I think I was at home.
You actually were just chilling.
We were still all at home.
Everybody was at home. Yes. Uh-huh. That's right. Where else would you be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you get online.
Yeah.
And
everybody's
talking about it.
We got a reservation.
Right.
And that was sort of the prevailing sentiment at the time is we got a reservation. It's a reservation, and a lot of people knew that was something to celebrate, but didn't know exactly what it meant and everything like that. But where were you, Riaz? I don't think I've ever asked you, what was your reaction? Where were you at? And what was the first thing you did?
So first I'll say, just, hearing you say all that, Jason, and I've heard many members of the nation say similar things. It honestly makes me feel so good and warms my heart. When you become a lawyer, you hope to be able to make a little bit of a difference and to do some good. And just the fact that we were able to be a small part of such an important history. And it just, every time I hear that, it really does send some chills down my spine. I was sitting, this was still the height of the pandemic and I was working remotely. So I was sitting in my parents' living room. I actually at their dining room table, And I was same thing. I had the computer up and I had my phone next to me and I'm refreshing SCOTUS blog. I'm technically a little challenged. And so there was a minute or two where I was fumbling with SCOTUS blog and I think the opinion came up. And so I first heard the exact same way you did, yeah. which was I started getting texts and then my friend, Ian Gershengorn, who'd been the lawyer for McGirt, called me yes. and, you know, Ian is a pretty even keeled guy. And he just was, the excitement in his voice, and we won. And then yeah. my partner, David Gianpetroni, same thing, called, and everybody's like, the first things I heard were, we won, and it's 5-4. And we sort of knew that if we were, it was going to be 5-4 one way or yeah. the other. The battle was all over Gorsuch. And then, you know, there was that sort of initial flurry of excitement about just the, as you say, the numbers on the scoreboard. But of course, you know, then we really wanted to read the opinion. So finally get like an hour or two and just start reading the opinion. And that was the other thing I'll never forget is it wasn't just the result. It was the way that Justice Gorsuch wrote that opinion. And as you're reading it, you know, for the accounting of the history and the accounting of the legal principles and some of the lines in there, like, you know, about the rule of the law instead of the rule of the strong. And it was one of those moments where as you're reading it, you felt like we're going to be quoting this opinion for the rest of our lives. Like this really is a watershed, not just in terms of the result, but what the court yeah. is saying about fundamental principles.
I mean, it was poetry. I literally read that opinion of Gorsuch himself. And I was like, did Joy Harjo write this?
We use it a lot. We do.
I mean, and yeah, that's so true, Shelby. And Riaz, I know this will warm your heart too. Just like you said, the things out of that opinion have been used as hashtags on t-shirts here, on things that we put out and materials we put out to some of our citizens. And I mean, tear inducing stuff, emotions rising like you could not believe. And the things that we saw that day on social media were just amazing. And I'm so glad that as the litigator and the person that was in it and took it on, and like you said, really just wore it emotionally. I'm so glad you got that to be able to see the real people's reactions and the visceral reaction from the people of the nation, because that's what it was all about. And when you talk about what Gorsuch said about the rule of law instead of the rule of the strong, I think now that moves us in this conversation into a place of, we knew that people weren't going to like this decision, right? It wasn't going to be a celebration for everybody. I think we can all agree that you're not going to be getting a Christmas card this year from Governor Kevin Stitt. Okay. I don't know if that bothers you, but I think you're going to be okay. But a lot of people out there, we knew, because Riaz, of course, we knew from the arguments from the other side that there was always going to be an aftermath and we lost on the rule of law. Let's use a public affairs campaign to get to the hearts and minds of Oklahomans that this is a bad thing, that this is chaos, that this is people setting free from prison, loose in the streets, no public safety in Oklahoma anymore. Heck, Oklahoma doesn't even exist anymore. They've turned it into a reservation. During the arguments, was that sort of did you acknowledge that that was a reality that was coming afterwards, or did you hope that we could maybe avoid that, or did you just think it was an inevitability?
So I think we sincerely hoped that we could avoid the worst of it. Yeah, obviously Oklahoma did a lot of fear mongering in the course of the arguments, and what we told the court, and we meant this with every, you know, ounce of fiber in our bodies, was that in Oklahoma there actually has been a great deal of cooperation between the state and the nations on a good number of issues. And, you know, for someone like, for our firm, you know, we represent tribes all over the country. Oklahoma actually stood out as a pretty good example of cooperation. And there were a lot of agreements in a lot of different areas. And what I told the court in both arguments was that we thought there was a real hope that that cooperation would continue. Now, as you say, you know, in the wake of the argument, the governor especially did not react that way. And it's, you know, it's highly unfortunate that, that the cooperation that really had been a hallmark, because of the governor, I think, really, you know, fell by the wayside a little bit. But I do think, Jason, that we are seeing over time is that some of that initial, shock, fades, and as some of the initial fear mongering fades, that there are still a very good number of people on both the tribal and non-tribal side of the equation in Oklahoma who do want to work together and who do recognize that is to the benefit of all. And so while we are doing plenty of battle on some issues, as you know, I am feeling more and more hopeful and optimistic that we will be able to get back to a place where cooperation is the hallmark. And I know that the nation's leadership, the Attorney General, many in the nation are working very hard in that respect. And I think it's starting to really, really bear some promising fruit.
Yeah. And I know you've kept an eye on us here and the things that we've done. I mean, basically, tripling our police force, tripling our prosecutors in the Attorney General's office. We doubled the amount of cross-deputizations across the reservation with our law enforcement agencies. We've cross-deputized with the Oklahoma Highway Patrol. There's been seamless activity between us and the U.S. Attorney's office in the Northern District in Tulsa, which is very important because that's a large part of our reservation. And really, if you look around the country, the only really comparable situation to that in as far as in scale is probably the Puyallups in Washington and with Tacoma and everything like that. So that's something we leaned on and said, you know, we can look to that as this isn't all bad. This can really work. And that's a great example of it working in a great way. And now as you look to the future, currently we have construction going on of our new four-story, $75 million citizen services building here at the tribe. But the second phase of that is an all-new court system, an all-new court building with several courtrooms, different things, an all-new Light Horse Police facility and headquarters. So, and they just covered that on local news here. So the good thing is that people are seeing the growth and the expansion and everything like that. But one of the things, Riaz, and I wondered, you know, if you shared the same sentiment, but that I was always trying to push with people is that you can't build that kind of capacity and that kind of dollar amount and the things that it takes to do all that on a conditionality. You know, we sort of had to say, well, we can't triple our Light Horse Police Force on the hope that we may win. So in really a lot of respects, the challenging part of the McGirt decision was that, okay, we won, now we've got to build, right? I mean, and I think a lot of people didn't really see that. They saw like, oh, how come you're not able to just day one, you know, handle the expansion and everything like that?
Yeah, so I'm so glad you brought all this up, Jason. It's a really important set of issues. So I'll say two things. First, you know, in terms of pre-McGirt, the nation, as you say, was already doing a remarkable job of exercising its sovereignty within the spheres that were recognized. And as I say, we represent tribes all over the country. When we came down, my partner David Jim Petroni and I came down and spent 4 days on the reservation after the Supreme Court had taken the case, but before, you know, briefing an argument. And at the end of those 4 days, I said to David on our way back, we're going to win. We're going to win this case in the court because we're going to be able to tell this story about all the things that the nation was already doing. And I was able to stand in front of the court and say, you know, in terms of policing, family violence, infrastructure, schools, education, healthcare, that the nation was already doing a great deal. And I'm convinced to this day, we would not have been able to win McGirt if we had not been able to tell that story about sovereignty being exercised. But then as you say, you get McGirt and it's a watershed and all of a sudden the scope, the sphere within which the nation's able to exercise its jurisdiction, the responsibilities that it have all get, you know, magnified exponentially. And absolutely, you're right. That takes time then to build up the requisite, you know, infrastructure, personnel, and the nation's done a remarkable job. And it's something that, again, helps us immeasurably every time we end up going into court. But we're able to tell the story about everything you just said, the expansion, the life force, the cross-deputization agreements, the building out of the court system, the building out of other infrastructure. Every single day when the nation is exercising its sovereignty and enhancing its sovereignty, that is a day that allows us to be able to continue to protect and vindicate the sovereignty. So the two really go hand in hand.
Absolutely. Well, we got about 5 minutes left here with you, and we'll wrap things up. Just talk about where you at now and what we got going on. I know we're currently waiting on a decision from the Oklahoma Supreme Court. You came down, and it was so good to see you there in person, and got to come down and spend some time with you there in Oklahoma City that day as we argued before the Oklahoma Supreme Court regarding the Strobel case and taxation. And we always believed that the McGirt decision did go into civil implications and things, while some people said, no, that's just criminal. And so I know that you probably hold the same opinion that we do. I know you do. And I know that it was probably for you a great treat to come down and argue in front of the Oklahoma Supreme Court as well on our behalf.
It absolutely was a treat. It's always a privilege to argue on the nation's behalf. And I'll tell you, Jason, I enjoyed that argument in front of the Oklahoma Supreme Court really as much as any argument I've ever had the opportunity to do. One of the striking things about the court is, and this is true of Oklahoma generally, you know, there's such a good baseline level of knowledge about tribal issues and Indian country, and the justices on the Supreme Court had a level of understanding about both the practicalities on the ground and Indian law concepts, which is really quite striking. And you were there. That was a very engaged argument. It went on for considerable period of time. There was a great deal back and forth. And I'm far too superstitious to make any predictions, but we did feel very good about the level of engagement and understanding. And as you say, it is a critical issue. Does McGirt apply in the civil arena the same way it does in the criminal? Our views, of course, are that absolutely it does. You can't slice and dice reservation status in the way that the state was arguing for there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was so glad that it wasn't a virtual setting, because I tell you, in person, you get a chance to see those justices when you're making your argument on behalf of the nation, that aha moment. And the opinion goes to the side, and the rule of law and the promises and what was made to the nation as far as those moments where you do, like you said, you can't pick and choose. You can't say it, what's good for here is not good for here. You absolutely have to paint it with a broad brush when you're talking about an affirmed reservation. And I think those justices understood that too, especially on the validity of the arguments that you were making that day. So again, we didn't have physical penance, but we were sitting there in the gallery going, go get him, Riaz. And everybody was there behind you that day. I know you felt the support and everything like that. And, just did a phenomenal job, and truly honored to have you on today with us and talking to the people and letting them, I know a lot of people out there have heard the name. They haven't heard you speak about these things in this setting. And so for us, it was such a treat and a real honor to have you on with us today, Riaz.
Well, this has been a real pleasure for me, and it's always wonderful to have the chance to talk. And as I say, it's such a privilege to be involved in the nation. And one of the things we really feel, and the Strobel argument was a great example, at that argument, you were there, of course, many members of the nation and the nation leadership. And we always feel, that level of support and commitment from the nation to everything we're doing. And that means the world. And it's just terrific to be, a part of these conversations and a chance to try and help the nation in all the just terrific work that it is doing.
All right, sir. We appreciate your time today. And like I said, hopefully we can get you on the podcast again, talking about winning the Strobel case. And we'll talk a little bit about the aftermath of that too. But we know you're a busy man. You got a lot going on, and we appreciate you taking some time out of your day to be honest with the Muskogee Pod and have this conversation from our reservation, because we feel it is so important historically. And really, as you said, that connection with the people that you felt is very real. And so we wanted to have you on in this first episode of our newest season. So we couldn't be happier. And Riaz, thank you so much. And have a great day, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right, and that was Mr. Riaz Kanji, and man, what a great conversation from our reservation. And Shelby, I mean, as just a citizen yourself, I mean, you think about that case, but you know, it's got to be so cool to hear from the guy that was there making the argument.
Yeah, definitely. Just some, you know, unique insight of, you know, what led up to it, and you know, I mean, where else can you get it than from the source?
Yeah, but, straight from the guy.
His story, like I said, I really like the part where he explained that, you know, we're in the thick throes of COVID, you know, and so yes. He was in his living room arguing in front of the Supreme Court with his wife and children.
Amazing.
That, I mean, yeah.
I didn't know
who
that.
Who writes that stuff?
You know, and seriously, and I didn't know that. And I had always, I guess, just thought that he was probably at their law firm, maybe just kind of in a boardroom by himself and maybe with some of his fellow colleagues and everything like that. But to know that he was just chilling in the living room at the house with the wife and kids, that's so cool. And it makes
that's
it
so COVID it times.
Makes it, yes. And it makes it better. It makes it a better story, really. Like you said, it's almost like a storybook. And I tell you, one of these days, I'm going to write the book of what we went through that first year. 2020 was just wild. And that might be the title, Wild, my first year as press secretary in the Muskogee Nation.
Sounds like a New York Times bestseller. And
yeah, hopefully, Shelby. That'd be awesome. Like, we're all going out to Roost Chris if that happens. No. But no, we're going to do some new things this year too with the podcast, and we're excited about that. So Shelby, just tell us a little bit about how we're going to kind of bring in the listeners and the fans of the podcast and how they can be involved as well.
Yeah, this season, what we're trying is to get more citizen input, because this is for the citizens, you know, by the citizens. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is welcome everyone, all our listeners, to, you know, send in questions via email to our Muskogee Pod email, which is MuskoguePod@MuskogeeNation.com.
Yep, MuskogeePod@MuskogeeNation.com.
Yep, go ahead and send those questions in, and also any suggestions on what, you know, any topics that you'd like us to, you know, discuss, any interview requests, things like that, and, you know, we'd be happy to oblige.
I think it'd be cool to get some of those questions in and see, you know, kind of what they are and you know, answer them if we can and try to find out the answers if we don't have them. And so, I just like the feeling of the interaction and the ownership for the citizens themselves and the fans and the listeners of the podcast. I want it to be an entertaining and fun atmosphere, but I also want them to feel like they're a part of it too.
Yeah, definitely. That's always nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So MuskogeePod@MuskogeeNation.com. You can listen to us on all of your outlets, all of your platforms, and now we're on YouTube. Definitely subscribe to us. Give us a review. That always helps. Definitely subscribe and review and let us know how we're doing. And as I said, MuskogeePod@MuskogeeNation.com. If you got questions for us, you want to hear them on air, and we can you know, answer that if we can, and if not, we'll do our best to get you the information if we pick that question. And then we'll also take in some of your suggestions for maybe subjects or people that we can interview. And that'll be great, too. So that helps us do our job. So appreciate that and everything. So, Shelby, it was really good to finally debut you to the world.
I'm glad it's over.
Thanks for being a good, thanks for being a good sport. You know, like I said, I didn't hit her with that. You know, we did a little bit of show prep, but I wanted it to be authentic. So I didn't hit her with that. Hey, I'm going to lead you in by being like, that's so Jot. Because like I said, the first time, like I started I met Shelby and we started getting to talk about kind of each other and like our backgrounds and stuff like that. She's like, well, I went to Sequoia. And I was like, oh, cool. And she was like, yeah, and then I went to high school. And I was like, dang, that's Jot. And that's why I remember that. I was like, from that day forward, you know, I was always like, wow, you know, Shelby's really seen a lot of cool stuff. Met a lot of good people and different tribes and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. And she really has a great grasp of that. So why not have her with me here on the Muskogee Pod? That's what I think. So
shout out to the Indian education system.
Thank you, Indian education system. Greg Anderson, wherever you're at. No, no, it's great to be on the pod again. And we're going to keep it rolling. And we're going to make sure that you have great episodes and, you know, entertaining, enlightening, and educational content and stuff that you're really going to be able to listen to. And I want people to listen to our episodes and go, man, I can't get that anywhere else but the Muskogee Pod. And so we're going to do that to the best of our ability, and we're going to continue to have robust and interesting conversations from our reservation right here on the Muskogee Pod. So for Shelby Botone and myself, Jason Salzman, this will wrap up our very first episode of season 3. And we want to thank Riaz Kanji once again, lead counsel in McGirt V, Oklahoma, for being with us. And we will see you guys next time right here on the Pod.